give her any.
You know what? I haven't even agreed to it. It just is a demand.
Good morning. We will call the May 17, 2023 Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District meeting to order. Director Corona, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance this morning? If everyone would stand, please.
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I would ask, like to ask the Board Secretary at this time if she could read the instructions for virtual participation and call the roll of the board and legal counsel.
Absolutely. We'll start out with roll call. President Pauley?
Here.
Director Corona?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
And our legal counsel is present. Just to note, Director Record is absent. I will be going over the guidelines for virtual participation in EMWD board meetings. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again. And please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking.
Thank you very much. April, do we have anybody here who is signed up to do public comment on anything not on the agenda this morning?
No, we do not.
Very good. Appreciate that. We'll now move to item 2 on our agenda, which is recognitions. This is one of my favorite things we do every year, and that is to recognize our Youth Ecology Corp participants. Alan, if you would come forward and lead us in that, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, President Pauley and members of the board. It's a pleasure to acknowledge the completion of our 27th cohort of the Youth Ecology Corps program. 2023 marks the 10th year anniversary for the Youth Ecology Corps program, and we've had over 225 participants participate in the program so far. The program was created to give real-world work experience to young adults entering the workforce and to teach them about water industry careers. EMWD has been proud to be a leader in the workforce development, and this program has become one of the largest success stories. Today, we are recognizing 8 Youth Ecology Corps interns for the work they have done during this last 3 months. The program is sponsored by the Riverside County Workforce Development Board and California Family Life Center. I'd like to introduce some of the representatives from California Family Life Center that are here with us today. So, Executive Director Mary Jo Ramirez, Program Administrator Lenore De Jesus, Program Coordinator Greg Snow, Career Navigators Rafaela Palacios and Amy Presley, Business Liaison Antonia Mateo. So, at this time, I'd like to have President Pauley and General Manager Jim Watt come on up to the dais. And Youth Ecology Corps interns, as I call your name, please come up and accept your certificates. We take the opportunity to photograph you with a board president and our general manager. So, first up is Antoinette Dubois. Antoinette, go ahead and come on up. So Antoinette has been working as an energy program assistant in our contracts department. This is her first cohort in the Youth Ecology Corps program. She has been asked to return for a second cohort starting in June.
Congratulations.
Mary Johnson. Certificate. Thank you so much. This is Mary's. Mary has been working as an engineering services assistant in the engineering services department. This is Mary's first cohort in the Youth Ecology Corps program. She has also been asked to do a second cohort starting in June. Congratulations, Mary. Costa. Elixir has been working, as a safety and risk management assistant in the safety and risk management department. This is his first cohort in the Youth Ecology Corps program. He's also been asked to return for a second cohort starting in June. Congratulations. Sitali Sanchez. Sitali has been working in two departments as a water resource and facilities assistant and engineering assistant. This is her first cohort in Youth Ecology Corps program. She has also been asked to do a second cohort starting in June. Congratulations. Diana Dove. Diana has been working as a records management assistant in the records management department. This is her second cohort in the Youth Ecology Corps program. She has also been asked to come back to do a third cohort starting on Monday. Congratulations. George Pachaco. George has been working as an education assistant in the Public Government Affairs Department. This is his second cohort in the Youth Ecology Corps program. He'll be coming back for a third cohort starting next week. Congratulations, George. Next up, we have Carlos Garcia. Carlos has been working as a development service assistant in the development services department. This is Carlos's third cohort in the Youth Ecology Corps program, giving him 1 year of work experience here at Eastern Municipal Water District. Congratulations, Carlos. Last but not least, we have Christopher Larry. Christopher has been working also as a development service assistant in the development services department. This is Christopher's third cohort in the Youth Ecology Corps program, giving him 1 year of work experience here at Eastern Municipal Water District. Congratulations. So in closing, I'd like to thank all the EMWD supervisors who are actively involved in the Youth Ecology Corps program. Without them, we couldn't do this program. EMWD General Manager Joe Mawad, and of course, the entire board for your continued support of the Youth Ecology Corps program. Thank you so much.
Everybody who participates in this program, someday in the future, myself, Joe Mawad, and others may not be here. So that is the future of Eastern right here, and we're happy to do this program so people can get a start in the water and wastewater industry. With that, we're going to go on to executive reports, and I'll ask Mr. Mawad to come up.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. My report is included in your packet. I wanted to highlight a few items this morning under new and ongoing items. Wanted to share with the board that our groundwater recharge activities have continued at the Mountain Avenue West ponds. As you're aware, the IRP ponds that were constructed as part of our Soboba settlement program, those are the primary functions of those ponds is to replenish Soboba settlement water. But due to the extreme weather that we experienced this year, as we started using those ponds, we started to see mounding have those ponds. So in working with the Water Master, as well as Saboba Tribe, we were able to arrange for use of our Mountain Avenue ponds to continue to accept Metropolitan State Water Project supply. So it was a good collaboration. I appreciate our operations staff being able to respond quickly to field conditions that were evolving. So far this year, we've recharged about 1,800 acre feet. Now, previously, during the last time we accepted replenishment water, we had recharged a little over 600 acre feet. So in total, we have about 2,400 acre feet that we have received relative to our average annual obligation of 7,500 acre feet. In conversations with the Metropolitan team, it appears that we will continue to receive deliveries at least through the end of the calendar year, possibly till April of 2024. So we are anticipating that we will not only meet our obligation for replenishment for 2023, but also 2024, 2025, and possibly even satisfy some of the demands for 2026. So there is a significant amount of available water from Metropolitan, specifically off of the State Water Project. In anticipation of the pre-deliveries that I just mentioned, Linnea sent out an email to the participants, the cities of San Jacinto and Hemet, as well as Lake Hemet, basically outlining the different scenarios as far as pre-deliveries so they can plan financially for their share of the water accordingly. So we'll keep you aware of developments, but so far it's great news that we're able to accommodate the pre-deliveries and deliveries from Metropolitan. Next item is the Doheny Ocean Desal Program. As you're aware, after our recent meeting with South Coast Water District, we have followed up, and in coordination with the Metropolitan Water District of Orange County, we sent in a letter to Metropolitan Water District essentially supporting MODOC's request for Metropolitan to engage in a process whereby they would work with the member agencies, including us and MODOC, to develop a policy whereby exchanges of water that result from local projects, such as the Doheny Ocean Facility, can be accommodated by Metropolitan. Currently, there is no such policy at Metropolitan. So we sent in the letter on May 1st, and we have continued to work with Metropolitan, South Coast, and MODOC on this effort. We're also developing a memorandum of understanding with South Coast for our initial participation in the Doheny project. We are expecting to bring that in front of this board for your consideration in June next month. Next item, I wanted to highlight a few updates at the Metropolitan Water District that occurred recently. One is the Metropolitan Board had reviewed the cyclic cost offset program, which became effective mid-April of this year. Essentially, the board agreed to have the program proceed. We obviously are very supportive of the program. They had the option to suspend the program. In the program moving forward, they increased the credit that is offered to member agencies that participate from $225 an acre foot to $264. Now, that offset is intended to reimburse or make agencies like us who participate financially whole in terms of the cost to replenish the water as well as to extract the water. So we are currently updating the terms for our cost offset agreement with Metropolitan, and we do expect to participate along with separately Rancho California. One of our sub-agencies is expected to participate. Last time we participated was back in 2019. We were able to do an in-lieu recharge of approximately 4,400 acre feet. We are anticipating to be able to accomplish a similar type of effort this year in terms of shutting down our wells in San Jacinto and Hemet and recharging the groundwater while we purchase additional water from Met with the offset included. Also, I did want to mention that at the recent Metropolitan Engineering Operations Committee, Metropolitan staff did present Eastern's request to consider the EM-11 service connection, including our request for Met to consider transfer of a portion of Met's easement as well as their decommissioned barrels to EMWD to help us with additional conveyance from the Skinner filtration plant. The report from the Metropolitan staff was well received. I did have the opportunity to make a few remarks and answer a few questions. I think overall it went really well. We do expect the item to come back in front of the Met board once EMWD has concluded its CEQA process. So we'll continue working closely with the Met team on this effort. And lastly, I wanted to mention on the Metropolitan front, I wanted to congratulate Director Armstrong for being appointed to serve as a chair of Metropolitan Subcommittee on Demand Management and Conservation Programs and Priorities. I think it's a wonderful opportunity for us to continue to stay engaged on an important and critical aspect of the dialogue at MET. Also, I did want to mention that yesterday, Director Armstrong and I had the opportunity to host our first Metropolitan Listening Session for agencies that purchase Metropolitan Water through EMWD, and specifically we invited Rancho, California Water District, Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District, Lake Hemet Municipal Water District, and Nuevo Water Company, and they all participated with their general managers and board members. It was a really wonderful opportunity for us to share what's going on at MET, specifically the upcoming Climate Adaptation Master Plan, some of the considerations for financial sustainability, for water reliability, water resilience. So it was a robust discussion, and I think it does provide good feedback for Director Armstrong as we embark on that effort at the Metropolitan Board of Directors. Under items of interest to the board, I had a chance to attend the Aqua Conference last week, and as you may be aware, Eastern was one of four finalists for the Claire Hill Award, and we were featured during the luncheon on Thursday. We were highlighted. Our Help to Others program was very much highlighted. There were three other agencies that were finalists, including San Bernardino Valley Municipal Water District, Western, and Santa Clarita Valley, who ultimately was selected as the award winner. But still, it was a really wonderful event to highlight EMWD's program. And finally, I did want to mention that on April 27th, I had the opportunity to participate at the Cal-LAFCO annual conference in Murphy, Northern California. And I was invited to participate on a panel that highlighted the issues associated with small and failing water systems consolidation. And I was able to share with the attendees Eastern's longstanding efforts relative to promoting and advocating for a streamlined process for consolidations of failing and small systems, including our experience in consolidating the county water company system, as well as our current ongoing efforts with the city of Paris. That concludes my report. Be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Questions from the board. Director Armstrong.
Well, first, just a comment. I wanted to compliment Joe, our general manager, on coming to Metropolitan on the item for EM11 and the Skinner transmission line. And I think it was really, really important for us to engage with the board at the front end of the discussions, be there to explain it, be there to answer questions. I think it just sets the stage for success with it. And I've seen in just my few months at Metropolitan where that's not taking place, becoming a problem and big hurdles for those agencies not doing exactly what Joe just did. So I just want to compliment Joe for the thought of doing that. And then the other item, I was wondering if you could just touch on the supply status right now with Metropolitan and knowing that they're going to probably have some excess water and why we can't get more of that water down here to do some additional recharge.
That's a great point, Dr. Armstrong. So as the board is aware, the Department of Water Resources has provided 100% allocation on the state water project. Essentially, Metropolitan not only gets 100% of its 1.9 million acre feet per year allocation, but there's also what's called Article 21 water, meaning excess water, where other contractors on the state water project are not taking their full allocation. So there is an abundance of water, especially with the snow melt starting to materialize. The challenge is the infrastructure system and its limitations and how much water can be moved, not only to Southern California, but within the metropolitan system, and specifically for us, the East Branch that brings water, state water project water, to our region. Essentially, it's running at full capacity. And that's going to be operating at full capacity for the foreseeable future. So although we are getting a lot of interest and inquiries from other state water project contractors about excess water being available to us for purchase, the reality is the system is operating at full capacity. And in fact, Metropolitan is not only trying to capture all that water, move as much water. They're replenishing all of their reservoirs. Diamond Valley Lake is expected to be at full capacity end of the year. But they are expecting to essentially not be able to capture about 300,000 acre feet, unfortunately, again, due to system limitations. So we will continue to monitor those operational conditions. If, Metropolitan starts to project later this year that they're not going to operate the system at full capacity, then it is an opportunity not only for us but for others to participate in programs or water exchanges or transfers to make sure that we're doing everything we can to not only refill our surface reservoirs like Diamond Valley Lake, but replenish our groundwater basin just like we're doing over in San Jacinto. So we will continue to monitor that. I hope that clarifies the issue.
It does, and I think it's important because I know there's other agencies that have been asking, you know, why can't we have Met do a discount to give us an incentive to take more water now while it's available, but essentially there's no way to get any more water.
Yeah.
So thank you, Joe.
Sure.
Any other questions or comments?
I just had one. I just want to, again, thank Joe and Director Armstrong. I think with the Doheny project, I'm happy to see that moving forward. I mean, this board gave our management a while back the mandate to go find new water resources for this area, and this is just another step in doing that. So I'm very happy to see that that is moving forward in a positive direction, and I look forward to hearing more about it in the future.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Adams, do we have anything from you this morning?
No update from the administrative branch.
Very good. Nick?
Nothing to report. Thank you.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. Starting back in 2016, EMWD embarked on a very robust technical and public participation process to be recognized as the Groundwater Sustainability Agency for the West San Jacinto Groundwater Management Zone or Management Area. In November of 2021, EMWD completed and submitted our groundwater sustainability plan in compliance with the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, or SGMA. Earlier this month, EMWD received notification that the GSP has actually been approved by the Department of Water Resources. Although the approval did include 8 minor corrective actions, those actions only need to be completed in advance of our next 5-year update, which will be in 2026. This is a significant milestone for EMWD in that many of the GSPs have yet to gain approval, and this was a very hot topic at AQUA as to how GSAs can get their plans approved. So great work by the staff and the board's support and approval of the document to reach this significant milestone.
Very good. Any questions on that? Director Slauson.
Sure. Were there comments? Were any of the corrective actions particularly onerous or...
No, and in fact, many of them are activities that we're already embarking on just in terms of implementing our plan. And we also are currently pursuing funding to help with the funding of those additional actions. And this approval, I think, will better position ourselves to be successful in gaining that funding.
Okay, thank you.
Good. Matt, anything for us this morning?
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. Since our last meeting, it's been kind of a bit eventful in water operations. And just want to make you aware of one event. On Sunday, April 23rd, the Department of Water Resources found that one of their valve vaults on the Santa Ana Valley Pipeline was flooded. So this prompted some actions over the weekend. Thankfully, we had almost a day to prepare and fill reservoirs in Moreno Valley, but we had to shut down the pipeline. Mills went offline for a time. And DWR was able to make repairs and put the pipeline and the plant back in service by Wednesday morning. So after doing some adjustments to our distribution system, filling reservoirs, we were able to get through that with no impacts to Eastern's customers. So that was fortunate. The other item is on April 28th, the Lakeview pipeline was taken offline by Metropolitan to remove some bulkheads. These bulkheads were installed to allow us to supply mills from Diamond Valley Lake during the drought. So removing these bulkheads gives Met a little more capacity to shift the state water project supplies around. So that was critical work that took about a week. It wrapped up on May 6th. They were able to keep us in service, but at a reduced rate. So we kept our filtration plant in Hemet running and maximized recharge through the duration, but currently everything's back online and we're running at full speed. Also, you may recall we had another rain event a few weeks ago after we had shut down our recycled water discharge for the season. Thankfully, demands have hung around 20 MGD, so we're really trying to get by. We've crept up to 92% on storage, which is just a couple percent into what we like to reserve. for emergencies, but we're watching this very closely, hoping these rain showers that keep popping up in the forecast don't cause too big of a decrease in demands and we'll get by, but we'll keep you informed if we get too full and have to discharge for a time again. And that's all I had.
All right, any questions?
Very good. Thank you very much for those reports. We will now move to item four this morning, which is our consent calendar. Do any members of the board wish to have a separate vote or pull an item for discussion? Seeing none, I will look for a motion and a second on the consent calendar.
Move
by Director Armstrong, second by Director Slauson. May I go to roll call vote, please?
President Pauley.
Aye.
Director Corona.
Aye.
Director Slauson.
Aye.
Director Armstrong.
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. We'll move to item five, which is our action calendar this morning. Item 5A is to approve and authorize agreements for the Paris North Groundwater Treatment Facility and Well Equipping Project, an additional appropriation of $87 million. Mr. Kowalski, good morning. You are here to spend our $87 million this morning.
Yeah, I'm a big spender today.
Okay. All right. It's a big spending day on the agenda, so.
Good morning, President Pauley, fellow members of the board. I'm happy to be here to present the update on Paris North Groundwater Program. Before I give my presentation, I'd like to introduce some of our guests today. First, we have from Pacific Hydrotech, Kirk Harnes and Kyle Bremer.
Thank you for being here, gentlemen.
And then with Gannett Fleming, our construction manager, Ed Durazzo.
Thank you for being here.
And then our engineer of record, CDM Smith, we have Roshana Flocky and Keenan Bull.
Good morning. Thank you for being here.
And our geotech of record, Converse Consultants, we have Hashmi Kwazi.
Good morning.
And last but not least, we have staff from Woodard and Curran, our environmental specialists and program managers, Brian Dietrich and Scott Goldman.
Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Okay. So by way of program overview, this particular program provides a new local water supply in the Paris North Basin. We're treating a commingled plume to eliminate nitrate, perchlorate, VOCs, and iron and manganese. And we're doing that with various implementing facilities, production wells, raw water conveyance pipelines, and a centralized treatment plant. By way of project overview, the project's located wholly within the city of Moreno Valley. As far as the scope of work goes, it's typical for the facilities we construct. And I'd like to just focus in on the diagram on the right and walk you through the different facilities we're planning. So we'll be constructing remote wells 65 and 66 in the north off of Ironwood Avenue. And from there, we'll convey the water to the centralized treatment plant via that red line. That's our phase three pipeline. That particular pipeline is currently in design. We'll be completing that design very soon and putting it out to bid. We'll be back to award that project. Moving down the line, about center of the diagram, we have our centralized treatment facility and two co-located wells, wells 206 and 207. From there, we have a pipeline running to the south. The first segment in yellow is our phase one pipeline that has been completed. And then from there south along Kitching Avenue, we have our phase two pipeline, which is currently under construction. And in the very south, near Iris Avenue, we have wells, remote wells 208 and 209. To give you an idea of what the proposed facilities look like, we have some renderings here. On the upper left, we have remote well 65. This is a view looking directly south at this satellite well. And on the right, we have well 208. This particular well is essentially located near the city corporate yard on Santiago Way. And on the bottom left, we have our centralized treatment plant and co-located wells. And on the bottom right, we have remote well 209, which is situated within Victoriano Park. The proposed contract does have an early deliverable for a park restoration that will be completed by end of year, early 2024. We've been very successful in the funding support for the program through the state, initially $45 million. And then we were able to lobby for additional funding to achieve an additional $17 million or $62 million total against the project. We also received a time extension taking the project through end of June 2025. As far as previous appropriations across all phases of the project, We fully reconciled the budget, and we've spent basically $53.5 million to date on the program. As far as bid summaries, we advertised the consolidated project, which is essentially the centralized treatment plant and the remote wells, to 6 pre-qualified contractors in January. We thereafter received 3 bids, and Pacific Hydrotech of Paris, California, was the lowest responsive and responsible bidder with a bid of $70.7 million, which is about 7% below the engineer's estimate. We've done a lot of work with Pacific Hydrotech, and they've done some similar work. They've completed the iron and manganese facility at our desal complex. In addition to the construction contract today, we're going to need various support services, starting off with construction management services. We put out an RFP in February, and soon after we received 2 proposals. We put together a selection panel consisting of engineering, field engineering, and our program staff to evaluate these proposals using our typical evaluation criteria. After review of those proposals, Canet Fleming came out on top with the highest quality proposal and best value and most qualified team to do the work. We were able to negotiate the scope and fee with Gannett Fleming from their base proposal, $6.1 million to $4.8 million, to meet the needs of the program. In addition to construction management, we'll need engineering services during construction from our engineer of record, CDM Smith. They'll provide the typical office services work, and I'd like to highlight they'll also provide a comprehensive electronic O&M manual for the program, as well as provide the necessary support with the Division of Drinking Water for permitting the treatment plant. Other support services needed during construction are geotechnical observation and testing, as well as environmental mitigation monitoring and reporting. We reached out to the engineers of record on that to advance this work. At the same time, we are looking to advance an amendment to our agreement with the City of Moreno Valley for paving. We advanced a contract in May for various pipelines across the city for reimbursement for paving work. At this time, we're looking to advance an amendment to that agreement for frontage improvements and various improvements surrounding the centralized treatment plant. So this will provide many benefits, including economies to scale, as well as refined in streamlined coordination for the improvements, and they'll provide reimbursement up to $375 to the district. Here's just a diagram of the proposed frontage improvements, which includes paving, sidewalk, curb gutter, and lighting. On the backside of the centralized plant, they have the existing Flaming Arrow and Sweetgrass storm drain. They'll be providing improvements there, including pavement, access gate, and then closure fencing with the neighbor. If approved today, we look to advance the project as soon as possible and then complete by the grant deadline in late June 2025. So with that, our recommendation today is to advance a construction contract with Pacific Hydrotech in the amount of approximately $70.7 million, to advance various support contracts as follows, one with Gannett Fleming for construction management in the amount of approximately $4.8 million, to a contract with CDM Smith for engineering support during construction, the amount of approximately $1.5 million. Three, advance a contract with Converse for the geotechnical support during construction, the amount of approximately $374,000. And then a contract with Wooder and Kern for the environmental support in the amount of approximately $123,000. Further, we look to advance the interagency amendment with City of Moreno Valley, as well as administrative award of other ancillary contracts to complete this work. So our request today is additional appropriation of approximately $87 million, taking the total program cost today to $141 million. With that, that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions on
that? We heard this in Option Engineering, and I have no questions. It looks good.
Good. Who is going to be quarterbacking this on the Eastern team? Is that you?
I'll be involved, and it takes a village to advance a program like this. So we have folks from all departments, as well as our program manager, Wooder Kern, will be the lead.
Very good. No, this is an important project for the district, and I'm glad to see it moving forward. With that, I'll look for a motion in a second. Make a Director Corona, you'd like to? Director Slauson can make the motion. Director Corona will second the motion. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. We'll go on to item B, which is to approve an authorized contract with Canyon Springs Enterprises for $6.3 million under specification 1411W Well 37 facility discharge pipeline for an additional appropriation of $8.1 million. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, President Pauly.
Spending only $8 million this morning. Okay. All right.
Like this guy.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. My name is Sam Valdez, senior civil engineer in the engineering department, presenting today staff's recommendation for award of construction contract for the Well 37 facility and discharge pipeline. Before I get into the presentation, I'd like to recognize a couple guests that we have here with us today. We have Josh McPeak with Krieger & Stewart, engineer of record.
Thank you very much for being here.
And we also have Eric Jarabek with Canyon Springs Enterprises.
Thank you for being here.
So this project is located at the eastern end in the city of San Jacinto, near the intersection of Mountain Avenue and Esplanade Avenue, adjacent to the San Jacinto River levee between the Well 37 site and the Well 91 site, as shown in the figure in the lower right. This project will replace Well 14, which has been abandoned, and provide an increased pumping capacity of groundwater. The major elements of the project include equipping the well, which includes installing the well pump, piping, and valving, two block buildings designed to blend in with surrounding development, one for the well and one for disinfection equipment, site improvements including a perimeter block wall, a new electrical service, two pipelines, a gravel access road, and system interconnections. For this project, the district was able to secure grant funding in the amount of $2.5 million through the DWR Urban and Multi-Benefit Drought Relief Grant Program that will partially fund the construction of this project. On February 28th, we advertised the project for construction, and on April 4th, we received four bids, with one of the bids being deemed non-responsive. The low bid was Canyon Springs Enterprises in the amount of approximately $6.3 million, with the engineer's estimate at approximately $5.6 million. Canyon Springs Enterprises has previously done work for the district when they were formerly doing business as RSH Construction. To support the project through construction, staff negotiated a scope and fee with Krieger & Stewart, engineer of record, to provide engineering services during construction. Their scope includes typical engineering services as listed here, including submittal reviews, preparation of record drawings, and electronic O&M manuals, as well as providing survey control and easement staking. In addition, we look to contract with Inland Foundation Engineering, the geotechnical engineer of record, to provide geotechnical observation and materials testing, as well as Helix Environmental Planning to provide biological and cultural monitoring services. Should we receive the board's approval, we look to begin construction immediately and complete construction in April of 2025 with a contract duration of 700 days. So with that, staff's recommendations are as follows. Execution of contract with Canyon Springs Enterprises for the construction of the Well 37 facility and discharge pipeline in the amount of approximately $6.3 million. Execution of contract with Krieger & Stewart for engineering services during construction in the amount of approximately $288,000. Execution of contract with Inland Foundation Engineering for geotechnical services in the amount of approximately $124,000. execution of contract with Helix Environmental Planning for environmental monitoring services in the amount of approximately $146,000. Ancillary contracts necessary to complete the work and additional appropriation of approximately $8.1 million, which brings the total project cost to approximately $8.7 million. So that concludes my presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Very good. First of all, excellent presentation. Any questions for the board? Do appreciate our guests being here. Is there anybody wishing to do public comment on this item? I don't see any, thus I will look for a second to make the motion. Motion by Director Corona, second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent.
Thank you.
Thank you again. Great presentation. Thank you for our guests being here on this item. We'll move on to item C, which is to approve and authorize an award of contract with Michael Baker International for $2.1 million for the Quail Valley Sub-Area 4 preliminary design and field investigations and appropriation of $2.4 million. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, President Pauley and members of the board. I'm pleased to present today on our staff recommendation for the preliminary design phase for this project. Before I begin, I also have a guest today, Mr. Miles Casanza.
Thank you for being here.
Department manager with Michael Baker International.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Oops. Oops. There we go. Sorry, jumping around too much. Okay. By way of background, the Quail Valley community located in the city of Menifee has been under a moratorium by the state of California since 2006 due to public health concerns associated with the failing septic tanks in the area. The moratorium originally applied to all 9 planning sub-areas. However, the Santa Ana Regional Water Quality Control Board issued an amendment in September 2020, allowing the application process to resume for all areas with the exception of sub-areas 4 and 9, provided that there is no sanitary sewer service available to those parcels, among other stipulations. The timing of that amendment came shortly after the sub-area phase 1 sewer solution was implemented in 2019. With respect to sub-area 4 project status to date, we previously completed the feasibility studies that outlined preferences for the sewerage solution in the area, as well as preliminary design of the Getz Road backbone sewer. If you recall, we've implemented and kicked off the design for the backbone sewer. And today we are now embarking on the preliminary design of the larger project, which is the septic to sewer conversion and the associated sewerage solution. There have been several stakeholders that have expressed interest in the sanitary sewer solutions for this area. The prior sub-area 9, we received funding from SWRCB, SAPA, and the city. EMD has also received funding from SAPA, SWRCB, to advance the sub-area 4 solutions. Specific to sub-area 4, we received the following 2 grants in 2020 supporting the planning level effort from SAPA and SWRCB. We have also secured earmark funding through Congressman Ken Calvert to support the construction phase of both the Getz Road sewer backbone as well as the Quail Valley sub-area 4 septic sewer conversion. So with this slide, I want to spend a little bit of time going through the details to set the stage for the following selection panel slides. The preliminary design of the Quail Valley septic to sewer conversion is not your typical sewer design effort. The graphic to the right, helps to describe or at least depict the magnitude of this project. You may recall in sub-area 9, phase 1 project consisted of approximately 125 homes and several lots, which the team experienced various challenges throughout the public outreach, site access, heightened level of effort, gaining right of entry, and then also locating and surveying the actual septic sewers and the associated laterals. In contrast, subarea 4 consists of approximately 523 homes and approximately 1,400 lots. It's a very dense community with small lots and narrow roads spanning over approximately 220 acres. Due to the congestion, along with the mixed areas of rocky and hilly terrain, we anticipate similar, if not more challenging, circumstances as previously experienced in subarea 9. The scope of the preliminary design phase will include an extensive outreach program led by our Public and Governmental Affairs Department and supported by the consultant. Once right of entry is obtained, the consultant is responsible for locating the existing septic and associated laterals at each of the 523 homes and documenting the necessary data for those field surveys. The scope also includes extensive potholing services, utility search, and we expect that we may need to employ ground-penetrating radar or other detection techniques within some of the backyards that are difficult, you know, and that don't have the just visual inspection capabilities. As the sewer alignment are further developed based on the actual locations and depths of the household laterals and surrounding utilities, this consultant will identify necessary easements and support our property acquisition. The data gathering and project definition will culminate into a preliminary design report, 30% design drawings, and definition for the CEQA NEPA process. So these complexities is really what weighed heavily on the selection panel's decision. In January, we circulated a request for proposal to four firms. All four firms submitted proposals. The selection panel consisted of members from the planning department, engineering department, operations, and we also brought on Eric Howard with ERSC as an extension of our program management. Eric has over 20 years of experience in the design of the Quail Valley community, and so we wanted to really harness his knowledge. We felt that was very beneficial to this project. The selection criteria is shown here in the table. It's our consistent with our typical selection criteria and weighted formulas. So as the selection panel reviewed the proposals prior to opening the fees, Michael Baker's proposal stood out amongst all the others. They presented a very clear and complete understanding of the project complexity, public outreach challenges, extensive efforts to access and complete the field investigation efforts. As evident by their original fee, we felt they were overly conservative in their scope development. So as a result, we decided to interview both the first and second ranked firms. And in the case of MBI, we were successful in restating expectations, assumptions for the field investigations, which reduced their fee considerably without compromising the attention to the complexity and the challenges accessing the occupied parcels. In short, they initially were looking at doing ground-penetrating radar techniques for all 523 homes, and so we did back that way off because we don't expect that those challenges will be at each and every household. So that's where the big savings was identified. Also, MBI schedule of 15 months and their estimated 11,000 hours is really aligns closely with what the selection panel was anticipating for this project and with respect to the challenges, again, which were extrapolated from the subarea 9 phase 1 experience. With respect to scope of work, it'll be the standard preliminary design, but then also, as indicated previously, there's an extensive public outreach, extensive utility and data gathering, and potholing services. We'll also be coordinating heavily with SCE in the area. We will have at least one regional lift station planned for this area, and currently they do not have 480 power out there, so there's some early coordination with SCE. In addition, we'll have a number of smaller grinder pump package lift stations. With respect to schedule, if the board approves today, we anticipate kicking off here at the end of the month, and and then with preliminary design completion scheduled for February of 2024. With that, our recommendation today is to approve and authorize the general manager to execute a contract with Michael Baker International for an amount of approximately $2.1 million, administrative award of the ancillary contract support, and appropriations of approximately $2.4 million to fund the project through the preliminary design phase. With that, I'll open it to questions.
Any questions on this? Director Armstrong.
I just want to thank staff. I know this is a very challenging project and very much needed project, and I just thank you for all your efforts, and I would move this item as well.
Thank very you. Good. We have a, and I'd like to echo that. I've been around here a while. I know Quail Valley has been challenging, but it's something that this district takes on because it's the right thing to do. But I'd like to echo Director Armstrong's comments that this is not an easy area to do this in, so appreciate it. We have a motion by Director Armstrong. We'd like to second by Director Slauson. And I'll get a roll call vote, please.
President Pauley.
Aye.
Director Crona.
Aye.
Director Slauson.
Aye.
Director Armstrong.
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Great presentation.
Thank you
for our guests for being here. We'll move on to item D, which is to approve an authorized agreement with CDM Smith Incorporated for $2.5 million for the design of the Romoland Feeder Replacement and Matthews Transmission Pipelines Project, an appropriation amount of $3 million. Good morning, Mr. Hill.
Good morning, board members. My name is David Hull in the engineering department. Thank you for having me today. I'm here to present the Romoland Feeder and Matthews Transmission Pipeline Project. I'd like to recognize Roshana Alfalki and Keenan Bull,
yes.
Representing CDM Smith today.
Very good. It's a big day for CDM Smith.
The proposed pipelines are in the city of Menifee and unincorporated portions of the Riverside County, generally east of the 215 and north of the 74. They share a common corridor on the Antelope Road. The Romoland Feeder in blue follows Antelope Road and Dawson Road. The 4.5-mile-long feeder begins at the existing Romoland Booster Station and extends past the Skiland Ponds up to Citrus Road. The Matthews Transmission Pipeline in green also follows Antelope Road and follows Watson Road, begins at the existing Romoland Booster Station, and extends up to the Watson Booster Station. This approximately two-mile pipeline will provide additional conveyance capacity to support upcoming development. The Romoland Feeder is used to move water north and south in the district's baseline pressure zone. The 1950s steel transmission pipeline has a recent history of leak repairs and is nearing the end of its useful life. The project will assess the condition and design a cost-effective approach to repairing or replacing the feeder. The Matthews transmission pipeline provides additional conveyance capacity between the 1627 baseline and 1720 Longview pressure zones. The master planned pipeline will be closely coordinated with the upcoming Matthews Booster Station. This system will support additional development in the Romoland and Menifee areas. In December of 2022, staff issued a request for proposals to 6 engineering firms and received 5. Proposals were evaluated by a selection panel comprised of representatives from the engineering, maintenance, and water operations groups. The panel evaluated each proposal utilizing typical criteria to determine the most qualified and best value consultant to advance the project. After evaluation, the panel identified CDM Smith as the top-ranked firm and best value. Staff negotiated the scope, and the final fee is highlighted in yellow. The fee totals approximately $2.5 million and is commensurate with the anticipated level of effort needed to deliver the project. CDM Smith has selected several subconsultants to assist with various specialty work. Many of these subconsultants have worked with the district in the past. CDM Smith's scope comprises of the typical preliminary and final design tasks, and including the condition assessment. Staff is also requesting to initiate easement acquisitions early in the design phase to maintain schedule goals. The scope of work, it will take approximately 21 months to complete and includes services through the bid award phase. If approved today, work would begin immediately. For Roma Land, the condition assessment would be scheduled for later this year. Final design would be completed in early 2025, with construction completion slated for fall of 2026. For the Matthews pipeline, the schedule would also begin immediately. Final design will be complete in fall of 2024, with the construction complete by the end of 2025. The recommended action today is to approve and authorize the following. Advance a contract with CDM Smith for preliminary and final design of the project in the amount of approximately $2.5 million. Initiate or negotiations for the acquisition of necessary project-specific properties and easements, if required, and open escrow on behalf of the district. Administrative award of ancillary contracts needed to support the design phase. And an appropriation of approximately $3 million to fund project costs through the completion of the bid award phase. That concludes my presentation. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions on this? Good presentation. Thank our guests. Do we have any public comment on this? Seeing none, I will look for a motion by Director Corona.
Second.
Yeah, I think Jeff had his hand up first. I'm going to give it to second by Director Armstrong. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly.
Aye.
Director Corona.
Aye.
Director Slauson.
Aye.
Director Armstrong.
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Thank you very much. We will now move on to item E, which is to approve and authorize modifications to the accelerated retrofit program. Mr. Wirth, good morning, sir.
Morning, President Pauly, members of the board. First off, I would like to acknowledge we have Greg Worthington with Valleywide Recreation and Parks District here.
All right.
Valleywide is our largest recycled water landscape customer, mm-hmm. and they're a great partner both on our retrofit program as well as on planning and conditioning development for new landscape. So I'm pleased to present on the Accelerated Retrofit Program, or ARP, update. By way of background, ARP was developed in 2015 following the state mandate for conservation. It was designed to assist customers in retrofitting over to recycled water and included three key elements. We in-house provide the design and permitting support. We also provide all of the public right-of-way work, the new services. And then we provide direct funding to the customer to pay for the on-site cost of retrofit. The standard max funding agreement is at $5,000 per acre foot. The customer then pays a special ARP rate for 10 years, and then at which time they revert to the then in effect recycled water rate. We also incorporate funding from Metropolitan Water District through their on-site retrofit program. The total funding of the program covers all three of these elements. So we kicked off phase one in 2015, with the goal of 400 acre feet, we were able to achieve almost 470 acre feet for a total cost of $1.9 million or just under $4,000 per acre foot. The phase one was really the low-hanging fruit, the easy stuff. We kicked off phase two in 2017 with the goal of an additional 460 acre feet. We were able to achieve 531 acre feet, along with 580,000 square feet of turf transformation. A little bit more complicated, a little bit more costly. Some of the projects required up to $10,000 per acre foot. Each one of those projects were approved on a project-by-project basis by the board. So we have a final cost of just over $4,500 per acre foot for phase two. Phase three was kicked off in 2021. With the goal of an additional 450 acre feet. Right now, we have about 418 feet, acre feet that are active. And about over half of that is pending agreements and ready to go to construction. There were a couple slight modifications to the ARP program with phase three. We gave the GM approval for on a project-by-project basis to go up to $7,500 per acre foot, and then we also increased our term from 8 years to 10 years. I did want to highlight a couple projects that are part of Phase 3. First is the McSweeney Farms community in Diamond Valley, South Hemet area. Kind of a unique project. The retrofit overlies the HOA-maintained area, a city project, and a new development. So it required coordination and partnership with all three. The bid came back at $11,000 per acre foot, but with the developer's contribution, we were able to complete it at an EMWD ARP cost of $5,000 per acre foot. The next project is a La Ladera Park in the city of Menifee. First City of Menifee project. The La Ladera Park does not have access to a recycled water pipeline, but they are adjacent to a Menifee Union School District site that's under construction. So the school district provided an easement to the city to install a irrigation mainline through their property so that we could facilitate that retrofit. They went out to public bid. The cost came in way too high. And the city opted to go ahead and reject the bids, and they're doing it internally with their own staff. That project is currently in construction right now. In conjunction with the French Valley Distribution Pipeline project that is currently in construction, Valleywide Recreation and Parks District has a significant amount of projects that will be fed from this pipeline. There's 17 retrofit projects that represent 30 potable meters that are going away for a total of almost 200 acre feet of potable water offset. We're also able to do 112 plus 1,000 acre feet of turf transformation. Valleywide bid all 17 projects out as a single project. They had one bid received for $2.9 million. In this area, the potable water is a higher HGL, and so going to the recycled water, we have to install irrigation booster pumps, so that's a primary cause of the increase in cost. We're currently working with Valleywide on some scope reduction and value engineering to reduce that cost, but our recommendation to move this project forward is to increase the funding up to $10,000 per acre foot. And also the term up to 13 years, and then also to allocate the MWD funding directly to the project. So the graph on the right kind of shows where we're at with ARP. To date, we have a projected total budget of $10.4 million. Of that, $8.7 has been previously appropriated funding from EMWD, and we're anticipating a total of $1.7 million coming from Metropolitan. The phase 1, 2, and 3 on the right-hand side shows the cost per phase along with the acre foot that has been retrofitted. For phase 1, 2, and 3, with everything completed, we'll have 1,400 acre feet retrofitted, 825,000 square feet of turf for a total cost of $5,600 per acre foot. We also have about 250 acre feet worth of projects that are on the radar. We just haven't started the process with them yet. And we anticipate after completion of Phase 3, we'll still have about $2.5 million available to complete those projects. So what we are seeing the last couple years is that the projects are significantly increasing in costs. $7,400 is the average cost per acre foot for all the projects currently completed. We have a couple pending projects where our engineers' estimates are up in that same ballpark. But all appropriations that we've received and the anticipated Metropolitan funding is sufficient to complete all of these projects. So we're recommending some modifications to our ARP program. We want to increase our standard agreement up to $7,500 per acre foot, and then on a project-by-project basis, allow the GM to approve up to $10,000 per acre foot with an increase in term to 13 years. We want to maintain the $250,000 max agreement, so just kind of by way of reference, the ARP compares pretty favorably with other conservation programs. Existing programs are between $102,000 per acre foot based on 10 years. ARP is at about $560 per acre foot, but we maintain the recreational areas and we maintain a revenue stream. So there are definitely some benefits with ARP, as we're seeing, the customers are able to avoid the upfront cost, and EMWD is able to help with the retrofit and maintain a revenue stream. So our recommendation today is that we increase our standard ARP funding agreement to $7,500 per acre foot and give authority for $10,000 per acre foot on a case-by-case basis with an extension of 13 years. We would like to also execute an agreement with Valleywide Recreation and Parks District for approximately $1.9 million and extending that rate to 10 years. And then other execution of agreements with Metropolitan Water District for the on-site retrofit program funding. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions, Director Slauson?
I don't have a comment, but I think you've done a really great job with this program, and I really support it. And I just want to mention that we had a planning committee meeting on Monday, and I asked John a question that took about 10 minutes to explain to me, only to find out I just misunderstood some of the basics. So I'm saving you guys at least 10 minutes right now.
Yes. Thank you, Director Slauson.
Director Armstrong.
Yeah, I just want to echo that. I think this is a great program, and I've done a really good job. And, you know, 1,400 to 1,500 acre feet converted, that's a mm-hmm. noticeable amount of recycled water conversion. I think it's real successful, and so just good job.
Thank you.
And President Paul, if I can add, I echo the comments by Director Slauson and Director Armstrong. I think I wanted to highlight a couple things. There's numerous benefits to this program, not only allowing us to fully utilize our recycled water, but frankly, in this case with Valleywide, when John is planning to convert 30 potable meters to recycled, that water system capacity returns back to us that we can then accommodate other demands on our potable system. So there's just tremendous amount of benefit every which way you look at it. And I do want to thank John. He's led this since 2015, since inception, and he's just done a terrific job. So thank you very much, John.
No, I want to chime in and say, John, thank you. I know we sat down 2014, 2015. I said, I want every park and school in French Valley on recycled water. And I think you gave me that look like you're crazy, but we're going to do it. We're doing it. I want to thank Valleywide is a fantastic partner to work with on this, but I'm watching the construction in French Valley of this right now, and I am very proud that not only have we moved about half the parks onto recycled system, but the other half are coming on. The Susan La Vega School is coming on, and it shows what this district does that I hope the public understands. I've always said I want our kids to have green ball fields and schools to have green play areas no matter what the drought conditions are. And we're doing that and keeping the landscape and all the things we're doing. So thank you very much. You're a hero to the district for doing this. And with that, do we have any public comment on this? Seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and make the motion to approve.
I'll second.
Director Corona would like to second it. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0. Thank you very much for that. We will move on to item F, which is to approve and authorize a water contract to Dalek and Sons Construction Incorporated for $1.6 million for the Sun City Water Operations Building Retrovation and additional appropriation of $2.1 million. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning. Again, my name is Ed Serna. I'm a principal civil engineer in the engineering department. I'm here to present the Sun City Water Operations Building Renovation Project. We are recommending an award of construction contract to Dahlke & Sons Constructions. I'd like to introduce the Dahlke & Sons construction team. We have Kenneth McManaway as a project manager.
Thank you for
Andy
being here.
As a superintendent. The water operations building is located at the Sun City Regional Water Reclamation Facility in Menifee, California. The water operations building was built in 1986. The use of this building has changed from a laboratory to being shared by multiple departments to currently being used by the water operations department. As a result, the current configuration does not suit the department's needs. Also, after 35 years, the building is in need of renovation. The district's on-call architect, GPA, was retained to assess the condition of the building and prepare engineering and architectural design. The reconfiguration of office spaces will accommodate the current operations staff, ensure the building is compliant with current code, and modernize fixtures and finishes. This proposed project will create separate and private offices for department supervisors, reconfigure the restroom to be compliant with ADA, reconfigure the floor layout to better accommodate office equipment and employee functions, add dedicated network access to workstations, and rehab the building finishes. The district received two bids on March 29. As you can see from the breakdown shown, Dahlke & Sons Construction is the lowest bidder with a bid of approximately $1.6 million. The engineer's cost estimate was $1.3 million. The difference between the low bid and the engineer's estimate is due to continued volatility in the market. If this proposal is approved, Dahlke & Sons Construction can begin construction and prepare shop drawings. They are expected to complete the project by August of next year. In addition to the construction contract, staff also solicited a proposal from GPA to provide continued engineering services during construction. Their scope includes preparing as-builts and review of contractor submittals at a fee of approximately $70,000. So our recommendation today is execution of a construction contract with Dahlke & Sons Construction for an amount of approximately $1.6 million, execution of an engineering contract with GPA for an amount of approximately $70,000, administrative award of other necessary contracts for the project, and additional appropriation of approximately $2.1 million to complete the project. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions on this item? To anybody wishing to public comment on this item? Seeing none, I'll look for a motion and a second. Motion by Director Slauson, second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Polly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Passes 4-0. Director Record absent. Thank you. Great presentation. Thank you for being here today. Look forward to working with you. We will do item G, and then we'll probably take a break. Item G is to adopt a proposed resolution of issuance of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District, acting as the legislative body of the Community Facilities District, number 21-91, authorizing issuance of 2023 special tax bonds and approving bond documents. Good morning, Thomas Hayes.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. By looking at the agenda, it looks like the powers that be knew that today was World Hypertension Day. You guys are going to finish off the day's presentations with a duo of Thomas and John. What was weird was...
I did not know that, but thank you for informing us about that.
Yeah, I found it odd that tomorrow is actually...
This morning.
I think everybody up here is glad
to... We're taking our medicine today.
I thought it was
add to our blood pressure, right?
No, okay, no, we're here to end it to smooth right, it back okay. down after all the contracts. I thought it was weird that tomorrow is Visit Your Relatives Day and World Hypertension Day preceded it instead of following it. So
interesting observation.
That was interesting. Anyways, thankful for today opportunity to come before you with this item. It's related to a bond issuance for CFD number 2021-91 Prairie Crossings. This CFD was formed in 2021 with a bonded indebtedness amount not to exceed $10 million for the purpose of financing district water and sewer improvements and improvements for Valleywide Park and Recreation District and Hemet Unified School District. CFD is located in President Pauley's division in French Valley, east of the city of Menifee off of Domnigoni Parkway. EMWD has formed several CFDs within this area, and the community is coming together quite nicely. A lot of development. The developer for this project is Lennar Homes, and it's being marketed as Prairie Crossing with two neighborhoods. The project contains approximately 117 gross acres and is planned for 230 homes. An appraisal was conducted by Stephen White, one of the district's approved appraisers, and with the value date of March 10th, the appraised value was $92.4 million. The third bullet on this slide summarizes the development of the CFD at the time of the appraisal, but by the end of this week, it's projected that 180 homes will be closed and by the end of this month, close to 190 homes. So the development is well underway, nearing closer and closer to completion. The CFD and this bond sale meets or exceeds the district's debt policy. The top chart really outlines where our requirements are and where the CFD bond issuance stands. Based on the appraisal, the value-to-lien ratio came in at 13.4 to 1. The delinquency levels are just about 3%. 136 homes were levied in this year's tax roll, and four delinquencies occurred. Additional homes are expected to be levied on the next tax roll in a few months, and that delinquency rate is expected to come down. The number of lots, as I mentioned on a prior slide, 230, exceeds the district's requirement of 100. This will be the only bond issuance for new money. In the future, any bond issuance related to this CFD will be to refund the bonds. Projected par amount is $6.5 million. Projected project fund, about $6.1 million. Since then, with the market and tightening up of some numbers, we're looking at right around $6.2 million. TIC is estimated to be 4.9% based on market conditions, and on the next slide, we'll look at the schedule in a little bit more detail. Strong Eastern team that we have on these CFD financings also worked on this project. Many members are here today. Just want to take a quick second to point them out. We have Anna and Chelsea from Fieldman, our municipal advisor.
Thank you for being here.
We also have Heidi from Webb Municipal Finance, our special tax consultant. Mm-hmm. And then the underwriter for this deal is selected as Stiefel, and we have Tom Jacob here in attendance.
For being here.
Today we're seeking board approval. Tomorrow we'll be posting the POS. In a couple weeks, we'll price the bonds, and then the transaction will close a couple weeks later. Last week, we wrapped up the due diligence call with the developer's counsel, developer's consultant, our legal counsel. Everything's looking good with this project and with the bond issuance. Today's recommendation is for the board to adopt the proposed resolution, authorize the issuance of the bonds, approve the related legal documents, and authorize the executive team to issue the bonds. Happy to answer any questions today.
Any questions on this item? And do we have any public comment? We do not. With that, Thomas, I'm going to take a deep and relaxing breath and move the item.
Thank you.
I'll second.
Seconded by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. We will take a 10-minute break before moving on to our next item. Yeah. So, reconvene our meeting. We're going to move on to item number 6, which is our informational items and presentations. Mr. Adams, you are going to do a summary draft biennial budget for fiscal year 23-24 and 24-25.
Yes,
welcome and good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. So today's item is, once it comes up, is an informational item. This is for our biannual budget for the next 2 years. This is our third and final study session, what will be before the board in June with the proposed rates for both water, sewer, and recycled water will be the budget that's scheduled in mid-June. So before I, you know, sort of just being consistent with the other presentations, just want to recognize...
You're not going to make jokes, are you?
No.
Okay.
No, right.
Okay.
And luckily, Thomas's wasn't that good, so I didn't have to worry about following up after him. But I do want to recognize a couple key staff and
find... I think that was a joke. I think that that was just a simple observation item that... a little fact-checking, I think.
So in addition to, for finance staff, I want to just recognize Donna Kaminke and Kendra Sotelo, two of our major players on the budget team, for all their work on this year's budget. certainly they did a lot more than I did on the budget, but departments, all of the departments, O&M, engineering, the amount of effort that is done by those departments is significant. So they really are the quarterbacks that put it together, but you know, just recognizing them and really all the hard work from all of the departments and their efforts. So really appreciate that. So this is the outline of the presentation. I'm going to talk a little about the strategic plan and the alignment and allocation of resources and highlight a few of the major strategic priorities of the board, talk about briefly the prior budget study sessions, you know, talk about a couple highlights. There's a follow-up item in that section based on prior questions from the board. I'm going to do high-level budget summary, talk about our $550 million budget per year. As talking to President Pauly, I think we spent about $100 million just today on that budget. So we're 20% through. And then highlight the capital improvement program, really go over some of the major projects, which some of them you approved today, the top five for each of the top five for each of the different service areas. And then talk about the draft budget document, 160 pages that's attached to the agenda today for the board's leisure reading, and then talk about briefly the timeline and summary. So strategic plan alignment. As the board knows, we adopted a triannual strategic plan, covers calendar years 22, 23, and 24. We have seven standards of excellence, and so really looking at that, you know, the budget is a spending plan, but really to accomplish the board's strategic priorities. So just quickly, and I'll go through these briefly, the first one, which is our largest capital project in the next 2 years, the $87 million that you approved today. So really just, you know, going to highly reliable and cost-effective water, wastewater, and recycled water services. The Paris North project, the well equipping, and then the two major projects at Moreno Valley and San Jacinto reclamation facilities. For public health, protection of public health, we have the Climate Action Plan, and then the one that you approved also, at least for the design, Quail Valley Area 4 sewer project. For customer service, certainly with the implementation of Kayenta, sort of expanding those enhancements to further improve customer experiences with our systems. And then one of the things PGA will be doing is periodically they do the complete customer preference and campaign and survey. So under sound planning and operational efficiency, with our legacy systems, two projects that are going to be replacing those, both for development services and finance, about $15 million over the next 2 years related to our DSMS and our ERP system. For financial responsibility and appropriate investment, certainly updating and reviewing our fiscal policies, but more importantly, based on some of our large capital projects, continue to pursue very aggressively grants and external funding to help with some major projects that are scheduled out several years. And then on the employer succession plan, the board's more than aware that we've kicked that process off. We should have a planning document in the first half of next year and then really focus on the implementation. And then just the MOU negotiations that are coming up in the second half of this calendar year. And then under effective communication, advocacy, and community partnerships, we talk about our regional collaboration with sub-agencies that we did yesterday, but, you know, even with StarCup. And then Youth Ecology was this morning, and really continuing to partner with those communities, like Youth Ecology or IE Works. And then finally, just our continued focus on water conservation and the reduction of non-functional turf. So just quickly on the summaries from the prior budget study session. So the first budget study session that was in March really highlighted the fact that, you know, on operations, almost half of our budget is for operating. So within that, salary and benefits and water make up almost 75%. Certainly the board has heard about the uncertainty, especially the high inflation and the impacts to our costs and a lot of the efforts that we've done to mitigate those. This budget does include the 4.8% increase from MET in 2024, remembering that those rates were sort of adopted prior to the high inflation and their cost increase. And we're projecting right now, based on their forecast from last year, the 7.6 in 2025. Certainly that can change as they go into their budget process next year. Wages and, you know, wages and benefits, I think the big highlight is just, you know, our staffing levels have been pretty flat over the last 10 years, even with the significant growth. And with this two-year budget, we're actually reducing positions by a little over 1%, but 7.5%. And then continue the pension liability contribution. For study session number two, really went into details on the services, water, wastewater, and recycled water, talked about the increases that would occur based on the most recent cost of service studies, and then really highlighted the operating expenses have increased over 9% over the next two fiscal years. We have a $300 million CIP plan for the next 2 years, of which $252 million is paid by EMWD and about $50 million in outside funding. All right. So I just briefly talk about our cost of service that was approved last month by the board, really a 12-month process. As the board knows, we've seen significant cost increase, and we'll be utilizing reserves to help minimize the impacts of our ratepayers, really to smooth those increases over multiple years. One of the other highlights is really going to the postage stamp for sewer, and that phase in over 7 years. In summary, for the average four-person household at 18 CCFs, the average increase next year, starting January, is 6.4 and then 6.5 in the second year. The cost increase, of course, would have been higher without the use of those reserves. So one of the updates I wanted to provide the board based on questions from last study session, and as Joe sort of talked about earlier about the replenishment water and potentially cyclic water purchases that we would be making. So the current budget includes, you know, the MWD rate increases. For untreated, we actually made a change. Our initial projections were based on information from Lake Hemet early in this calendar year. Conditions have changed, and so those projections have change. And I have a slide to show those changes. And then replenishment water, certainly Joe talked about the us accepting in April, potentially taking it through April of next year, and there would be pre-deliveries. And so right now, the current budget that's in front of you today only anticipates the normal 2,500 acre feet, which is our share of the 75. We'll be making adjustments on the final budget based on sort of that planning of how much we expect to receive in the next 12 months. Again, that could be up to 30,000 acre feet, and which 10,000 would be our share. It's about a third is our share. And then we talk about cyclic storage. Right now, we're working with water resource planning to sort of do that analysis and then come back with what the cost increases, if there are some, what those would be, and those would be incorporated in the final budget. So year one, year two, the purchases were actually reduced. So in year one, the 4,000. Lake Hemet initially came in with projections at 4,300 for each year, and that was in February. In April, we did follow up based on comments at the board, and they reduced that projection to zero. So that 4,000 is really a direct reflection on their reduction. And then as it says there, we're really looking at the forecast for replenishment water and then cyclic to figure out what the true impact will be on the budget, and we'll bring that back to you in June. So here's the slide on Lake Hemet. As mentioned, February they had provided 4,300 acre feet for both fiscal years. At this time, they were taking up, you could see that in 2023. I mean, they're over 4,000 acre feet is what we project this year. But based on comments of the board and follow up, based on the increase demand, we did talk to Lake Hemet again, and they actually changed their projection to zero for next year. They are not sure what the weather will be like or what their needs are going to be, so they wanted to keep the 4,300 in the second year. And so, you know, looking at a 10-year trend, we really said, you know, maybe we only anticipate around 3,000 acre feet. So this graph below just shows you, and you can see in 2016, 17, 18, 19, you know, during that last drought, you know, they were doing roughly 4,000 acre feet, as low as 38 up to 45. After, you know, those heavy rains in 1920 and the water, you could see in blue that their needs almost disappeared, almost zero. Second year, you know, a few hundred acre feet. As the drought has, you know, been persistent in the last couple of years, certainly over 4,000. So Right now, we're anticipating zero for next year and then 3,000 in 2025. And that's really the only major change, at least right now, on the purchase water. We'll have any other changes on cyclic or replenishment, and I'll highlight that at the next meeting. So I mentioned our annual budget, about $550 million. Overall revenues, revenues are increasing 9%. Significant increases in property tax, which I'll show. Connection fees based on the updated fees and adjustments to ENR, and then, of course, the rate increases. And I sort of highlight rate increases, property tax, and demand based on new connections. 544 and then 549. The real change there is the light blue, which is use of reserves. Our use of reserves in the second year will go down. So for expenditures, overall operating expenses, on average, 8.7% over the two-year period. CIP, certainly we've seen increased costs and have significant programs out there. When you compare the current two-year proposed budget for capital compared to the prior 2 years, it's a 23% increase. Debt service, a slight increase, 3.6 over the 2 years. Operating fixed assets, we did have some increase because of costs and then some of the carryover that has not been spent. G&A is only 4.2 over the 2 years, and then the pension trust fund really keeping that flat at $15 million, I should say. So we talk about the increases on operating expenses, and you've seen this slide before. I mean, operating expenses have really been driven by energy, chemicals, and waste hauling. You can see those high double-digit increases, and those are really impacting those operating costs significantly, which we have not seen for a long time. So just highlighting those is really what's driving those operating cost increases. And just talking about mitigation, board's seen this, but I just want to reemphasize, I mean, these are some key points on just our really taking a look and trying to mitigate the impacts as much as possible. Certainly, we talk about grants and being very aggressive on that front. We did have reductions in positions or have not added new positions based on really taking advantage of technology. Talk about projects to expand our local supply, and then utilizing reserves to really offset some of these cost impacts and stabilize rates for our ratepayers. maintain that AAA credit rating really helps in our cost of borrowing when we talk about our variable rate and even future debt. And then sustainability projects. Certainly we've expanded solar over the past few years, and then just the battery storage program that is starting or is in progress. So at a high level, this is the consolidated budget, really highlighting operating revenues. That overall increase does anticipate the rate adjustments that will be in front of the board in June, which is ultimately that 6.4 on average, 6.5 in the second year. You can see property tax is based on the current budget update and then what's projected at $59 million, a 10% increase. Certainly, assessed value within our region has continued with the development and just overall sale transactions. Development connection fees, we are very conservative on our estimates as far as how many EDUs or EMSs are going to be connected right now. We're between 25 and 30% above budget based on current activity. So this is really looking at our 10-year history. And then interest income, as rates have increased, our interest income has. On the expenses, I went through those in detail. You can see very similar from year to year. And then you can see our net margin, $90 million to support capital in the first year and 97. That's why there's a reduction in the second year with the use of reserves. So capital improvement program, the five-year is $686 million. And again, we spent $100 million of that today. Going back and just looking at the 2 years, what is in the budget is $300 million. But again, grant funding at $48 million. So our net's going to be the $252 million. Really, just looking at the bar graph, really the focus is water. You can see $90 million in the first 4 years per year. The sewer and the green, those are the two, a lot of that, the 53 and 50, 53 million and 50 is really those rehabs at those reclamation facilities. So, mostly water, but then we have some major rehab and expansion at the sewer. Overall, again, $686 million over the 5 years. So I left this slide, or slide is really just to talk about the different types, and really the focus here is just where the funding is coming from. So when we talk about expansion or future growth in Moreno Valley, the expansion, the 18.5 MGD expansion, most of that is being funded from connection fees, right? So new connections are paying for that. For system betterment, these are coming from just our normal rate payers. So whether it's system betterment or rehab and replacement, those are coming from our current rate payers as part of their capital charge. This number changes, going back and looking, let's say 5 or 6 years ago, you had a lot more towards expansion, especially when we looked at sewer, but system betterment has been relatively consistent between 2025, but rehab and replacement has been inching up a little. And certainly that just is a sign that our, overall as we, age, we're going to be replacing and doing major rehabs on a lot of our facilities. So just going through water, these are the top five. The Paris North is the one that you guys approved today. The funding over the next 2 years is the $45 million, and then the wells that help support that, you see that almost $6 million. And then just a couple other transmission or pipelines for both Getz, Paris Boulevard, and Paris North. These five projects are over 35% of the funding for next year. So 65% is in other projects. We have about 200 projects in the 500. So certainly you can see a lot of smaller projects, especially in water, is that other 65%. On sewer, talked about the two plants, both Moreno Valley and San Jacinto. See the amount being funded over the next 2 years, the $43 million, and then just some other smaller projects. But these five projects are 50% of the amount that's being allocated in that 2 years for wastewater. And then you can see the other half of the money is for the other projects. On recycled water, certainly not as big as water or wastewater, but 93% of the plant's expenditures are in these five projects. The French Valley distribution that we talked about earlier, or President Pauly mentioned, and then Dunlap and Winchester Road again. So those are five of the top projects for recycled water, representing over 93% of the total funds allocated for next year. And then on the general facilities, not a lot of money over the 2 years, only a little over $5 million, and it's just in these five projects. So the budget document, I mentioned it's part of the agenda packet today. I think it's 186 pages, but really provides this high level that I'm presenting to you today, but also goes into a lot of detail, identifies every fixed asset that we plan to replace, goes through the capital improvement program, talks about the various special projects and studies, and then really what I think a lot of the departments spend a lot of time on is highlighting their accomplishments and goals. When you're allocating millions of dollars to these different operations, they really like to highlight those accomplishments and goals for the next 2 years to justify how they're spending those funds for the benefit of the district and the ratepayers, and then an org chart and FTE counts. So it's always good reading right before bed. It helps you go to sleep sooner. So timeline right now, May 17th, we've had we had the cost of service presentation that happened last month. As you all know, we did mail out Prop 218 notices on May 5th, which is the 46 days before the public hearing. We do have the public hearing scheduled for the 21st, in which the board will hear both the final budget proposal and then the proposed rates. July 1st would be the start of the budget, and then, of course, rates would become effective January 1st of next year. And with that, the summary is as I mentioned earlier, the mitigating effects or efforts that we've done to do our best to try to reduce potentially higher than average rate increases. the phase-in on sewer and really utilizing reserves to help mitigate those impacts, and then really that the public hearing is set for June 21st at 9 a.m. With that, I'm available for any questions.
Any questions on this? No questions. Okay, I just want to make one reminder. When we, on the 21st,
I still want to have kind of a slide and scenarios of what happens if we don't raise rates. That, to me, is an important part during a public hearing on here's what happens by taking action. Here's what happens if the board chooses not to take action, what effect it would have on district operations and capital projects, et cetera. So, I hate to task the finance team with more work, but
it's on our list from the last one. Also, just some comparisons to other agencies that have other rate increases. I think we have a list of 3 or 4 items that we're really going to highlight to try to make that point that we are doing our best to mitigate the rate increases for our ratepayers.
Very good. And one last question, and maybe this is for Director Armstrong. You had the was it 7.6 projection for MET in 24 or 25?
So MET has a 10-year forecast, and they actually had 7% as their average. So we take the rates that they're going to have for untreated capacity, RTS, and we apply it based on what our projections are, and the effective increase, at least impact, is 7.6. But that forecast was before those rate increases. And so,
yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything more to add to it. I mean, we haven't really got into that.
Yeah, but these are pretty we've done this in the past, and I would say we have a pretty good track record of predicting kind of the MET increase to blend into our numbers.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with demand down like it is this year for Metropolitan, they're it's a challenge. I think they're going to use a substantial part of their reserves to offset that this year, and it's.
I agree, Dr. Armstrong. So at the general manager's meeting among the MET member agencies, this issue came up. MET is currently experiencing record low sales. In fact, the transactions are slightly below 1.3 million acre feet. Their budget assumed closer to 1.6 million acre feet of sales. So the question that's come up is what kind of impact is that having on the Metropolitan's reserves and financial condition? So I did see Metropolitan CFO Catano Araqua, and she has been asked by her executive team to bring back an item for further discussion because it is having an impact on their reserves. In addition, you know, as John mentioned, when the 5% increases were established a year ago, MET and frankly the entire industry had not seen the full weight of the inflationary pressures that we've seen on chemicals and power and other commodities. So that's also adding to MET's operational expenses. So I think to the point that you raised, President Pauly, that the 7.6 is a projection. I think as MET goes through a review of their financial status, that may change. So we will not only monitor, but we'll be part of that conversation at MET as it comes up.
Very good. Appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Adams.
Thank you.
Great presentation. Look forward to the 21st. With that, we will go to our receive and file items. I'll look for a motion and a second on that. Moved by Director Corona, second by Director Armstrong. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crono?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. We will go to our calendar review. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. I have one event for your consideration this morning, and that is the Jamil Dada Character Excellence Youth Award Ceremony, which is scheduled for Friday, July 14th.
I would like to go to that.
Sure, definitely.
Thank you.
And that flyer is located within your calendar packet. So turning to page 2 and 3 is the current listing of the board members' master calendar. Please review the information and provide any changes or updates. Continuing on page 3 are the upcoming events and conferences with participants. Tomorrow, May 18th, is the University of California Redlands Water Affordability Symposium. On Thursday, June 15th, there are 2 events. There is the Southwest Regional Economic Forecast in Temecula in the morning and the City of Murrieta State of the City Address in the evening. So, on Thursday, June 29th, is the Western Riverside Council of Governments General Assembly, and those flyers are also located at the end of your packet. So, continuing on page 3 and 4 are the board meetings through August, which are scheduled on time. and the board committee meetings, board committee meetings, excuse me. Please take note that the executive committee has been rescheduled to Wednesday, May 31st at 7:30 in the morning. The retirement trust committee has been rescheduled to Tuesday, June 6th at 7:30. Has been rescheduled to, Tuesday, June 6th at 7:30 in the morning. And then the administrative committee on June 1st has moved from the afternoon to 7:30 in the morning as well. And then continuing on page 4 in the middle is the interagency meetings through July, which they are all on schedule. And EMWD's offices will be closed Monday, May 29th in observance of Memorial Day. So, any questions or comments regarding the calendar review?
See none. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. We will go to director's attendance reports, and we will start with Director Armstrong.
Okay. Start with the MWD updates, some of that was already covered in previous discussions, but what I would highlight still is just want to say thanks to our staff for coordinating some meetings and events over the last few weeks. We had our reception for the Met Chair Ortega out here, and just did a great job coordinating that. Appreciate that. But I thought it was a good event and a good opportunity for some of our stakeholders to be able to get to meet him and listen to him and his vision and where he thinks things are going. So appreciate that. And then, of course, yesterday we had our listening session. Thought that went really good and appreciate the effort to coordinate that. And then also yesterday, our general manager and I had a meeting with another member agency of Met to kind of continue to work on building our relationships here in the Inland Empire with other member agencies of Met, and thought that was worthwhile as well. So all good things there. Then EMWD meetings. Let's see, had the update with our general manager, which is always helpful. We had our deferred comp oversight committee meeting, and I would say my takeaway from that is that the program, our deferred comp program, is just continues to go really, really well here at Eastern, and I know it has a lot to do with our with the efforts that we make to inform our employees about deferred comp and the importance of it, and the participation levels are remaining strong. Employees are not panicking through this tough time in the financial world, and they're sticking to their contributions and their participation, and I just think that's really important, especially for employees that are PEPRA employees. This is going to be a really important part of their retirement in the long term. And so the efforts that our Eastern team makes and our deferred comp partners make on that is really important, and it's going well. Paris Valley State of the City, I attended that with Amanda Fine. The city's making a lot of investments in Paris in their infrastructure, in their amenities with parks and other things, and their overall general fund finances are growing, and the city's doing a good job, and they're getting stronger, and it's all a good story there. So that was a good event. CalDESAL, nothing really to report there. Was a good event at the Aqua Conference with their mixer, and things are going normal there. The EMWD Elsinore Valley ad hoc joint meeting really was mostly focused on our staff providing Met updates to Elsinore Valley, and then also talking about some shared items of concern. So that was good. And that's really everything.
All right. Thank you very much, Director Corona.
Okay. The party we had with Adon Ortega, of course, it's already been covered. It was a great event. Marietta Library Earth Day I attended, and that was also really good. We were there with the van and giving away very nicely priced water at that event. A lot of happy people there. Monthly update with general manager. Of course, that was also a great event, which happens monthly. The Southern California Water Coalition quarterly luncheon that was held down at Wilson Creek, and we We got a speech from the lady running Cadiz. That was very interesting, what they're trying to do with water up in the desert. Murrieta Temecula Group meeting. It wasn't really well attended this month, but we did get a speech from some folks that have gotten some art money from the County of Riverside, and they want to do promotional stuff in the area to try to bring in folks. And they didn't want to use the name Inland Empire, so they came up with this name called Ten Lakes because they saw all these reservoirs. I don't think it got a really good reception, especially from the water folks, but they told us it was going to grow on us. But anyway, so they're trying to do some promotion on that. The Aqua Conference, what a difference 6 months makes. I'm telling you, 6 months ago it was doom and gloom. And, boy, everybody's happy now. The interesting thing is just everybody's trying to figure out how can we save this water. I mean, this doesn't happen very often, and how can we get it in the ground? How can we put it in reservoirs? It was a very good event. Everybody's very upbeat. Of course, Jeff covered EMWD in Elsinore Valley, and yesterday I had my meet and greet with LAFCO and their staff and general manager there, and so I'm looking forward to my first meeting next week, and that's all I have.
All right, very good. Again, the thing with Chairman Ortega was fantastic, and again, I know our staff had a lot to make that successful, so I appreciate that. I unfortunately did not make Earth Day at the Murrieta Library, and I'm glad you did, and I'm glad the water van, which I am a huge champion of, was out there. As Director Armstrong covered, Deferred Compensation Oversight Committee was fine. Things are on track there, which is good. Southern California Water Coalition lunch with Cadiz Chair Susan Kennedy I thought was extremely interesting and well attended, and I thought one of the better programs in recent memory there. I had the opportunity to go to Assemblyman Corey Jackson's, had a brunch for local elected officials from the Water Committee, and myself was there. Board Member Torres from Western was in attendance, and Assemblyman Robert Rivas, who is going to be the new speaker, was there. I had a chance to talk with him and introduce Eastern to the new Assembly Speaker, or the incoming Assembly Speaker in the California Legislature. I was able to tell him some of the things we did, and I will say that Board Member Torres was standing there and said the Eastern is a leader in recycled water, so I really appreciate that from her. WRCOG, again, we had the General Assembly coming up later part of June. Look forward to that. I met with Ivan Haller and Councilman Ron Holliday, who's fairly new to the Murrieta City Council, but he wanted to make sure that we were keeping an eye on the keyhole. So, Nick, I know you were out for a while, but I suggested they contact you, and I think that's important to Councilman Holliday that we get updates to him and the city on things that could be done in the development world there. So that was good. Again, like outreaching to our fellow council people, I think working with the city of Murrieta and my important, we've had a really good relationship with them and want to continue to do that, i.e. Works Officers Meeting. We are planning some upcoming strategy sessions on how to get more people, younger, mainly from some of disadvantaged communities, into the water industry. And again, I just a comment back to item one. Chairman Ortega's wife is a member of the board of IE Works, and I want to keep and build that relationship because I think it's important to bring people into the water industry. We had Youth Ecology today, big supporter of that. I was unable to make the Winchester MAC meeting, but I know Alma was there, and this indicated to me there's some folks coming to our our public hearing on rate increases from the MAC meeting, and look forward to having them. And then, as always, a great meeting the other day with our general manager to update us. So that's my report. Director Schlossen.
Yes, SAPA on May 2nd, we had a presentation on the financial report for the Bryan Line and discussion of the rates. On the Hispanic Chamber installation dinner, it was nice event. Everyone, a lot of people were there. From Moreno Valley, two council people and the mayor, and Supervisor Gutierrez was there. And I did not attend the RCC board meeting on Tuesday, yesterday. And yesterday at SAPA, we approved the final Bryan Line rates and discussed or approved additional funding for irrigation and landscaping at the headquarters, for SAPA's headquarters. We approved a resolution to recommend Kathy Green for Aqua President. And we had a little presentation for Mark Norton, who's just retired from SAPA, 30-plus years.
All right. Very good. Do we have director's comments or future agenda items? I have one, and this is I want to direct to Director Schlossen. I was contacted about a week ago by the county hospital there in Moreno Valley, and they kind of have a walkway for patients recovering from things, and they were kind of interested if Eastern could maybe do a demonstration garden or something to help along those lines. So I said that's kind of Director Slauson's area, but if you don't mind, I might put them in contact with some folks here at Eastern and see if we could work something out for the county hospital and their kind of garden area there.
Yeah, definitely. I've worked with a couple of people there, and one of them is a director with me on the chamber in Moreno Valley. So certainly I'll...
Okay. I just thought it might be something we might be interested in doing, so I will put them in contact with the right people.
We will look at that, President Paul. We work very closely with the county health services on various projects, so we'll definitely look at this opportunity to do a demo.
Out there taking a tour, and they said, hey, you're on the Eastern, and we've seen your demonstration garden at the headquarters. We were wondering if we could do something out at our place for that. So I said, let me check with Director Schlossen. So there you go. I will move forward on that one. With that, legal counsel, I understand we have a need for closed session.
That's correct, President and directors. One item will be considered by the board in closed session under Government Code Section 54956.9, potential litigation. Thank you.
All right. Why don't we take a couple minutes here to switch over to closed session? Okay. We are back in open session. I'm going to let legal counsel report out of our closed session agenda item.
Thank you, President Pauly and directors. One item was considered under potential litigation, Government Code Section 54956.9. No reportable action was taken by the board in closed session. Thank you.
Very good. With that, we stand adjourned until 9 a.m. on Wednesday, June 7th. Thank you.
Thank you.
Shayla, we just leave these here?
Yes.